Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q2 FY22 earnings conference call of Dr. Reddy's Laboratories Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Amit Agarwal. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Very good morning and good evening to all of you, and thank you for joining us today for the Dr. Reddy's earnings conference call for the quarter ended September 30th, 2021. Earlier during the day, we have released our results, and the same are also posted on our website. This call is being recorded, and the playback and transcript shall be made available on our website soon. All the discussions and analysis of this call will be based on the IFRS consolidated financial statements. To discuss the business performance and outlook, we have the leadership team of Dr. Reddy's comprising Mr. Erez Israeli, our CEO, Mr. Parag Agarwal, our CFO, and the investor relations team. Please note that today's call is a copyrighted material of Dr. Reddy's and cannot be rebroadcasted or attributed in press or media outlet without the company's expressed written consent. Before I proceed with the call, I would like to remind everyone that the safe harbor contained in today's press release also pertains to this conference call. Now, I hand over the call to Mr. Parag Agarwal. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Amit, and greetings to everyone. I hope you and your families are keeping safe and well. I'm pleased to take you through our results for the quarter two of fiscal 2022. We had yet another quarter of strong double-digit growth in terms of revenue, EBITDA, and profits, which were also our highest ever in a quarter. Let me take you through the key financial highlights for the quarter in a bit more detail. For this section, all the amounts are translated into US dollar at a convenient translation rate of rupees 74.16, which is the rate as of September 30th, 2021. Consolidated revenue for the quarter stood at rupees 4,763 crores, that is $777 million, and grew by 18% on year-on-year basis and by 17% on a sequential quarter basis. The growth was driven by both base business and recent launches, supported by contribution from COVID products and out-licensing income in our proprietary products business. This was partly offset with continued price erosion, mainly in the U.S. and Europe markets. Consolidated gross profit margin for this quarter has been 53.4%, a reduction of 50 basis points year-on-year and an increase of 120 basis points quarter-on-quarter. While the gross margins in current quarter were impacted due to price erosion, product mix, and increase in input material cost, primarily on KSM solvent and other fuels, it was supported by out-licensing income and leverage benefit from manufacturing overheads. Gross margins for the global generics and PHAI businesses were at 56.9% and 25.9% respectively for the quarter. The SG&A spend for the quarter is rupees 1,595 crores, that is $215 million, an increase of 22% year-on-year and 6% quarter-on-quarter. The increase was to support sales growth and on account of continued investment in sales and marketing activities for brands in India and emerging markets and behind digital capability building. As a percentage of sales, our SG&A has been at 27.7%, which is lower by 290 basis points over sequential quarters. The R&D spend for the quarter is rupees 446 crores, that is $60 million, and is at 7.7% of sales. R&D spend increased by 2% year-on-year and declined by 2% quarter-on-quarter. The R&D spend increase for biosimilars has been offset by a reduction in the proprietary products business. The EBITDA for the quarter is rupees 1,557 crores, that is $210 million, and the EBITDA margin is 27%. The EBITDA margin for the H1 FY22 is at 24.1%. Consequently, our profit before tax stood at rupees 1,268 crores, that is $171 million, which is a growth of 47% year-on-year and 71% quarter-on-quarter. Effective tax rate for the quarter has been at 21.8%. We expect our normal ETR to be in the range of 25 to 26%. Profit after tax for the quarter stood at ₹992 crores, that is $134 million. Reported EPS for the quarter is ₹59.65. Operating working capital increased by ₹950 crores, which is $128 million, against that on June 30th, 2021. The increase was primarily driven by an increase in receivables of ₹752 crores due to increase in sales and planned discontinuance of the receivable discounting program in the U.S. Our capital investment during the quarter stood at ₹358 crores, which is $48 million. The free cash flow generated during this quarter was a net inflow of ₹83 crores, which is $11 million. Consequently, we now have a net debt of ₹268 crores, that is $36 million, as on September 30, 2021. Foreign currency cash flow hedges in the form of derivatives for the US dollar are approximately $450 million, largely hedged around the range of ₹75 to ₹78.4 to the dollar, ₹6,750 million at the rate of ₹0.9919 to the ruble, AUD 5 million at the rate of ₹58.40 to Australian dollar, and South African rand ₹74 million at the rate of ₹4.97 to South African rand, maturing in the next 12 months. With this, I now request Iray to take through the key business highlights. Over to you, Iray.
Thank you, Parag. Good morning and good evening to everyone. I hope you are all safe and healthy. I am happy to note that we had a solid performance in this quarter on the back of all-around performance and contribution from all of our key businesses. This was on the back of consistent base business delivery, ramp-up in key new products, coupled with contribution from sales of COVID portfolio in certain markets, and out-licensing transaction announced during the quarter. It is encouraging that we are on track on delivering on our strategy, while also delivering healthy EBITDA and ROCE. We feel very optimistic about the future prospects of the overall business, and there are enough levers for us to continue this growth momentum in the coming quarters as well. Today, the US FDA audit of our formulation manufacturing facilities, FT07 and FT09, was completed. We have been issued the form 483s with 8 observations. I believe that these observations are addressable, and we will do so in the stipulated timeline. Let me take you through the key business highlights for the quarter. The reference to this number and these sections are in respective local currencies. Our North America generic business recorded sales of $255 million for the quarter, with a decent year-over-year growth of 3% and a sequential quarter growth of 8%. The growth was led by market share improvement in our key base products and scale-up of the launches from previous quarters. The overall normalizations of demand levels also contributed in decent volumes across various categories of products impacted by COVID last year. During this quarter, we launched one product in the United States and 3 products in Canada. The launch momentum should improve during H2, with the multiple goal dates line up for ANDAs under review. Our Europe business recorded sales of 47 million euros with a year-over-year growth of 10% and sequential quarter growth of 5%, driven largely by new product launches. During the quarter, we launched 2 products each in Germany and Italy, 3 products in the UK, and 1 product in Spain. We believe that Europe will continue to be a growth driver for us in the next few years, with two-pronged strategy of portfolio and market expansion. Our emerging market business recorded sales of 1,298 crores rupees, with a strong year-on-year growth of 50% and a sequential quarter growth of 42%, partially supported with sales of COVID drugs. Within the emerging market, the Russia business grew by 46% on a year-over-year basis and by 62% on a quarter-to-quarter basis in constant currency. The growth was primarily led by A, higher volumes due to seasonal demand, B, revival in market growth after a negative impact due to COVID in quarter one, and C, launch of biosimilar bevacizumab. During the quarter, we launched 24 new products across various markets. Our India business reported sales of 1,140 crores rupees, with a strong year-over-year growth of 25% and sequential growth of 8%. This strong growth was supported by both COVID portfolio as well as sustained performance of the base business. During the quarter, we launched two new products in India. As per the IQVIA report of September 2021, we have grown by 21.3% on a MQT basis, much faster than the market growth of 15.4%. Our PCAI business recorded sales of $113 million, with a year-over-year decline of 1%, but a sequential quarter growth of 11%, partially supported by contribution from COVID drugs. While there may be fluctuation quarter-on-quarter sales, we believe that there are opportunities to grow this business. During the quarter, we filed 24 drug master files globally, including two filings made in the U.S. We have also filed 24 formulation products across global markets, including two ANDAs in the United States. As of September 30, 2021, we have 93 cumulative filings pending for approval within the US FDA, which include 90 ANDAs and 3 505B2 NDAs. In line with our strategy of commercialization of the proprietary products through out-licensing model, we have successfully out-licensed two of our products, E7777 and DFN15, during this quarter. We have further strengthened our strategy with the focus of ensuring short-term growth and at the same time build strong foundations for the long-term growth. Our core business in North America, Europe, India, Russia, China, and other emerging markets comprising of the unbranded and branded generics and global API business will continue to drive growth. This growth would be led by an expansion of portfolio across markets, improvement in market shares, and driving operational excellence with a focus on productivity. Over the last few quarters, we have built strong pipelines of COVID portfolio drugs, and this can be a meaningful additional growth opportunity for us in the short to medium term. As of now, we have commercialized Sputnik vaccine, Abigan, that is Favipiravir, Remdesivir, and 2DG, and currently conducting clinical trials for Molnupiravir and various other drugs. While this portfolio has made decent contribution in the last few quarters, we believe that there are multiple opportunities even for the future. Specific to Sputnik, we are exploring several growth opportunities which include A, Sputnik Lite as a vaccine or as a booster dose, Sputnik Lite for adolescents, and C, export opportunities. We are also investing in various innovation business which will drive growth in the long term. This includes building a global pipeline of biosimilars, development of NCE for immune oncology, building OTC and nutraceutical portfolio, vaccines, CDMO, and digital healthcare platforms. With the addition of these new spaces, we are significantly increasing the growth opportunity for us. While majority of our growth will be organically driven, we would supplement it with relevant inorganic opportunities. We will continue to grow our profits despite investment in the new businesses. The key two enablers which will drive this success will be our people and the digitalization initiatives being undertaken by us. As we are committed to our patients to bring in the innovative medicines at affordable cost, we are also committed to our investors for driving healthy and profitable growth on a sustainable basis. With this, I would like to open the floor for questions and answers.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Kunal Dhamesha from FK Global. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So the first question is, what would be the COVID-related sales in this quarter for us, including the domestic market as well as the exports?
So the COVID sales, you know, we have recorded some sales in India and Sputnik, and we have also sold Favipiravir in a few emerging markets. So overall, the contribution, we have had a good contribution from COVID sales during the quarter. For example, in India, the reported growth year-on-year is 25%. But if we were to exclude Sputnik vaccine sales, the base business would have still grown in mid-teens. So overall, I would say that it has been a good contribution from COVID portfolio during the quarter.
Sure. And the COVID vaccine sales, would you say it has been margin accretive for us?
So the Sputnik did not contribute to the COVID, but also did not create a loss for us. We are about break-even between the investment and the between the investment and what we gain. During the quarter, we could have sold much more if we had supply, and but we had the especially June, July. A shortage of supply, we fixed that, and now we are self-sufficient out of India for the future on the opportunities that I mentioned, meaning adolescents, kids, export, Sputnik Light, both for vaccine and boosters.
So have you able to crack any contract for the export with the IDIU?
We do have contract sports for this.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Surya Patra from Phillip Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity, sir. Sir, can you give some clarity whether or what is the kind of a contribution from the generic Revlimid that we have seen from the Canada side this quarter? And what is our kind of preparedness and time? And also, if you can talk something on the timeline about launching the generic Revlimid in the US.
I'm sorry, I did not get the question. Some clear line.
Just a second, sir. So, is it fine, sir? I just wanted to have a sense what contribution that we would have seen from generic Revlimid that we have launched in Canada this quarter?
Yeah, so it was a decent launch. Canada is naturally not a big market, so the overall contribution is not much, but it was a decent launch for Canada.
Okay, if you can give some clarity, sir, is there any clarity now to launch the product, same Revlimid in the US, and what is our preparedness for that?
So we got the approval, so we are very happy about it. And with that, it's basically the last obstacles to launch. So we are secured both in terms of regulatory as well as legally. And we will launch it in accordance to our agreement and our settlement agreement.
Sure. Just last one question on the gross margin for the generic business. What we have seen that, there is a kind of a steady declining trend that we are witnessing for the generic business, global generic gross margins. So it has trended down from 61% to now 57% levels. So is it because of the pricing pressure what that has been there in the US, or generally it is led by multiple factors, but can be recovered going ahead with the new launches coming up? And some sense on that gross margin front, sir.
Yeah, so there are multiple factors here. But first, I would like to point out two, three drivers that put downward pressure. So, one, as you know, the export incentives that were withdrawn has clearly put a downward pressure on the gross margin. Secondly, as you rightly pointed out, there is some pressure that is there because of the North American price erosion. However, we have a number of levers to offset this impact. One is productivity. So as we drive higher sales growth and we spread our assets, we can leverage the cost base. And the second is the product mix. Some of our significant high-value launches are margin accretive. So overall, I don't believe that, you know, there is a downward trend in gross margin. Gross margin fluctuates from one quarter to another. And we are fairly confident of the margin profile of the generic business.
Sure, sure. Thank you. Wish you all the best.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Damayanti Kerai from HSBC Securities and Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. My question is again on gross margin. So in view of input material cost inflation, how should we look at trends in next few quarters?
Yeah, so indeed, there is an impact of the increase in the commodity prices, and we are offsetting it with productivity activities. This is one, and second, with the better sourcing. So, in general, I believe that you're going to see similar margins, especially gross margin, as you see. We normally trend somewhere between 51 and 56. In the last few years, more between that 51.5 to 54. This will probably continue to be that way. I wanted to emphasize, and I normally say it in those meetings, some of it is, of course, product mix. If we will get a great opportunity, at 49% will not necessarily say no. So for me, it's more about the actual money than the percentage of it, while, of course, we are very sensitive to the percentage of the profitability as well. But let's say likely that it will be the same range also in the future.
Sure. Thank you for that. And on Russia business, you explained some region which has led to very strong sales during the quarter. So going ahead, how much of this is sustainable and how should we look at growth patterns in Russia and CIS market in next few years?
It is sustainable and we also planning on growing in Russia. So it's sustainable with the projection of growth. At the same time, it's not necessarily sustainable on quarter to quarter. Some of the products are seasonal and depends on the cold and flu and stuff like that, especially the products. Some of them are seasonal because they are tender products for hospitals. And therefore, it depends on the timing of the tender. But on the year-to-year basis, we are planning to grow in Russia.
Sure. And my last question is on U.S. Pricing scenario. So what kind of erosion we are facing right now and when do you expect it to normalize for the base portfolio?
So we do see, like others, a relatively higher level of price erosion, which we were able to offset with both the new products as well as productivity measures. Price erosion will always be there because this is the business model, but it can fluctuate, depends, of course, on the relevant products, the products and how much competition will be there for our relevant products. So likely that it will be moderated for us in the next few quarters, if I can estimate. The type of products that that we have in front of us. But it's very much products or mix dependent. I don't see any change in the United States in terms of policies or any structural change.
Okay. Thank you, Rej. I'll get back in the queue. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, thank you. Perhaps some data questions. First, in the ROW market, we were doing last year 300 crore kind of run rate. Now we're doing 200 crore in quarter one and 500 crore now. So is the incremental large part of it, so can we assume that 150-200 crore will be the COVID sales there? Or can you help over there? What will be COVID percentage over there?
I don't think I would quote any specific number for competitive reasons, but, you know, this quarter's growth in rest of world, rest of the market is about 90%. I would say, even if you exclude the COVID growth, the growth, base business growth is still very strong, in markets like South Africa and Latin America. I would say there is a good contribution from COVID portfolio, but the base business growth also continues to be very strong. I'm afraid I can't give you any specific numbers.
Sure. That's helpful. Second question is on SG&A. Quarterly increase that you've seen, which you talked about 6% increase quarter-over-quarter. Are these some of the discretionary spends that we're doing now but may not do later on? Or is this very much a new base for us that we continue to spend on this base?
SG&A, see, as I think I have been saying for a couple of quarters, there are two, three drivers for the SG&A increase that you see compared to same time last year. One is we have seen normalization of operations, and last year's first couple of quarters, SG&A was subdued, and now we are seeing normalization. We are seeing good growth in our markets, and therefore we are putting money behind our brand in the branded markets like India and Russia. We are also investing behind digitalization, both front end and back end. That's one part of it. One is normalization, I would say, has largely happened. Second is investment that we will continue to do. The third point I would make is this quarter also has a royalty on favipiravir sales, the COVID portfolio sales, which is the third reason. Broadly, I would say that SG&A has normalized. As a percentage to sales, which is a key measure that we track, we do believe that overall in aggregate for this year, it will be lower than last year.
Sure. Sure. That's helpful. Just last question on the Dowda plant. Two parts to this question. One is how many pending ANDAs are from this plant? Secondly, in terms of rate observation, are more observation on the injectable side or on the oral side of the plant?
Can you repeat the second question?
Second question is on that out of the eight observations, are more observations on the injectable side of the plant or on the oral side of the plant?
Yes. We have quite a few ANDAs. We are not disclosing specific numbers that will come from that side. I went and read the observations that will be in the public domain soon. We believe that they are addressable, and of course, we need to address it within the relevant time, and we will do so. These are primarily related to products and not to the site itself. Primarily given the fact that it was a PAI type of an audit, which is also had a GMP as well. It's a combination of GMP as well as PAI. Naturally, most of the energy was about giving approval for specific products.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. That's helpful.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Good evening. My question is on Revlimid. Just wanted to check where we have, you know, 2.5 mg and 20 mg. Do we have exclusivity? If yes, are we at par with NATCO to launch these two doses?
We believe that we are entitled to exclusivity on those two strengths, and we will launch them in accordance to the settlement agreement that we had with the innovator.
With respect to timeline, would you give just broad timelines, if that would be helpful?
We cannot give timelines. Sorry for that. It's part of the agreement that we have.
Okay. Rough cut, it would be in the range of $500 million-$700 million?
It will be decent amount of money, we believe. We believe that the number will be decent. We cannot specify or guiding any number as per our policy.
Okay, got it. And my question is on the sales that we have done ex-COVID. So India, you called out that your India growth is mid-teens ex of Sputnik, which means about 9,200 crores. How would it look if I include the exports also? Because you have seen a very strong growth across your ROW markets and emerging markets.
Yes, Sputnik in the relevant quarter was not exported. We believe that licenses will be generated during this quarter itself. But in the third quarter, we did not export to Sputnik. Okay. Sorry about that. So we did not export during Q2. Export license will be given by the government only during this quarter, and when we will receive that, we will be able to export Sputnik, not before that.
Okay. So the follow-up on ROW is there is a exceptionally high growth, and what I heard last was that the growth momentum is strong, but any particular reason you want to call out? Is it COVID-related products, or is there any one-off to that?
There was a great contribution, especially from Avigan, for Favipiravir, especially in Asia. This was the part that related to COVID. But as Parag said, even without COVID, there is a very, very robust growth, primarily led by growth in the Russia, in China, in the rest of the emerging markets, in both retail and hospital products. So even without COVID, which contributed in a healthy manner, we have a healthy growth, and this will continue also in the future.
Very helpful. And last one on the PSA, sir, if you could just give some highlight, when do we start seeing growth and margin improvement? And on the back that we're already hearing a lot of raw material pressure, so what exactly we are doing so that our growth comes back?
The main growth will come in the next, so overall strategically, the main growth will come when the new portfolio of API, which will of course support launches by our customers, including our own internal use of the new API. So if you wish, our API business, the biggest product is primarily driven by a group of products that are, let's say, veteran in the generic business, and the new products that will be launched, primarily peptides, will replace that, if you wish, Pareto products in the next coming years. Specifically, the API is doing well, given the fact that that on one hand you have increased in the commodity and you have intensified competition of some of these key products, but we are doing well in the penetrating with the newer products, and I believe that within the next few quarters we will see a sustainable growth. The fluctuation that we see now probably will continue the next 2 to 3 quarters.
Okay, very helpful. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Nithya Balasubramanian from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. So my first question is on generic Vascepa. What's the current API situation? Has it eased out? Can you scale up and take the target market share?
So on Icosapant, we believe that we secured the API that we need for the next few quarters and beyond, and we feel very comfortable with our situation right now.
Your competitor had commented that this is possibly not a high-margin product as they would have normally imagined the new launch to be. Would that be the case for DRL as well?
We are not going to discuss the profitability of this product. I can say that I'm very happy and pleased with the performance of this product.
Thank you. My next question is on if you can give us an update on generic NuvaRing and generic Copaxone, where you are in terms of the review cycle with the FDA, and if you're on track for an FY23 launch.
We are both on the same stage that we discussed last time. Copaxone, kind of the ball is in our court. We still need to address FDA. I don't remember even how many cycles we have by now, so the recent cycle. In NuvaRing, we are waiting for the FDA response. We submitted, I think, back in June. This is the status that we have now. About launch prospect right now, I cannot give any guidance for the launch. Learning from the past experience, when we see it, I believe that we are going to get it.
Fair enough. Just on NuvaRing, given that NuvaRing and Copaxone, given that it's gone through multiple cycles of queries and then review by the FDA, should we still assume once you've submitted it's still a 6 to 8 month review cycle, or does it go longer because it's a multiple cycle now?
With the current practices with FDA, every time that we submit, we are getting a new goal date, and that's the practice that probably will continue. I don't think it will be less than that for every submission.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sameer Baisiwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much and good evening, everyone. Elise, on your Sputnik, you had contracted for 125 million doses, and the expectation was that you would achieve that within, say, 12 months. Given where India is today in vaccination, so do you think this is a realistic target, or do you think the volumes could be a lot lower?
On the wave of vaccination that was in India, especially during July and August, we clearly missed it, primarily because we were lacking of supply on the second dose. And right now, the level of vaccination in India is very healthy. At the same time, we believe that it's still a very viable opportunity, given the fact that Sputnik can be a booster for any vaccine, not just in India, but elsewhere. The qualification of Sputnik Light as a vaccine and as a booster, and the trials that we are doing for both kids, meaning 2 to 12, and adolescents 12 to 18, as well as the ability to export. So it's a new, if you wish, a newer opportunity or newer positioning. In terms of quantity, it's hard to speculate. Potentially, it can be even more than that, but I would not necessarily speculate the number. It should be still a viable opportunity for us. But naturally, I wish we had more supply during July. We could make this quarter even better.
Okay, great. Thanks for this. For Vasipa, very specifically, Eris, I know you've answered that you have secured supply for the next few quarters, but has your new API supplier approved by FDA, or that filing is still pending?
We got the approvals of the suppliers that we seek for.
Oh, excellent. Okay, wonderful. And Elise, I know you have very limited comments on Revlimid 2.5 and 20 milligrams, and I would not push you too much, but the question here is that for these two strengths, the contract is same as you have for other strength, or is it a different contract with the innovator?
The two strengths are included in the settlement agreement we have with the innovator.
Sorry, I missed that.
The two strengths are included in the settlement agreement we reached with the innovator.
Okay. I'll take this offline. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good evening, and thank you for taking my question. Just the first one on the molnupiravir clinical trials that you have been doing in India. What is the update. I thought end of September is when trials conclude, but I could be wrong.
We are expecting the results within the next few weeks, and of course we are expecting the approval of the product by the US FDA. And if both will happen, then it's an interesting opportunity, especially for countries with a lower level of vaccination.
Sure, Eric, that's helpful. So this could be, and given that Molnupiravir seems to be the preferred candidate at this point of time, do you foresee this to be a large, both you have rights in India as well as low and middle income countries, right?
Yes, we have high expectations, but COVID, like COVID, no one knows what will happen. So we are preparing ourselves for a big opportunity, and let's see what will happen, because it's, of course, it depends not just on the approval, but also how the pandemic will evolve in the next few months and quarters. So
sure.
I wish I knew, but we are preparing for the upside. Yeah.
Yeah, no, sure. Does our trial also cover prophylactic use, in which case the use case could be larger, right? Or do we have to do something different for that?
No, it's a prophylactic use.
Got it. Okay, helpful. Second question is on Suboxone film. I know we've been in the market for quite some time, but the brand still seems to be retaining like whatever 25% market share. We are at 13%. I'm just quoting IMS data, what I can see. Should with the 4 to 5 generics, shouldn't generics be higher? Do you think there is further room on Suboxone film?
It very much depends on the patterns of the the way this product is being prescribed and reimbursed. So the level of penetration of generics is going to be higher in the future. It's just lower than the other. By the way, I do see a higher market share than the number you shared now.
So, Eric, it's close to 20%, you think?
It's north of 20%, yeah.
Okay, great. That's very helpful. My last question is on China. Anything that you can help us update in terms of how are we doing, either quarterly or annual run rates? What's the product portfolio there? How many are we launching? Anything in terms of the tender systems? Any update on China? Very helpful.
Sure. So, first of all, we are on track with China. Also, the performance in China is very, very positive on both the partnership that we have there, KRP, as well as the products that are going to what we call the GOP tenders. We are preparing to submit relatively larger numbers of products for the GOP that potentially can be among the first to files and among the first to markets. At this stage, more than 50 products. For next year, this year it will be probably less than 10 that eventually will be submitted. And as you know, in the GOP is normally have a cycle of 2 to 3 years, depends on the nature of the products, and we are targeting the approvals in accordance to the timelines of those tenders. At the same time, our partnership is focusing on branded generics and OTC, and this is going very, very well, and continue to grow in double digits.
Thanks, Eric. All the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shrikant Sapolkar from Asian Market Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. My first question is on Revlimid in Canada. So can you please talk about initial trends like price erosion or market share gain?
No, I cannot speak yet on these terms, primarily because post-launch in Canada, there is a process in each one of the provinces and states to get approval. So as you know, in Canada, you are getting approval from the Minister of Health, and then You need to register it in each one of the provinces. So this is the process that we are in. So we did launch the product. It's a healthy launch, but it did not reach yet its potential, and it will be once it will be approved in all the relevant provinces.
We lost this line, so we'll move to the next question. The next question is from the line of Charulata Vaidhani from Dalal & Broacha. Please go ahead.
Yeah, two questions. One, in terms of the outlook in terms of biosimilars, when do you see it contributing meaningfully? By which year? And secondly, during the quarter, there has been some licensee income as well as sale of rights income. So adjusted for that, how much would be the normalized EBITDA margin that Dr. Reddy's has on?
Yes. So on the first question, the biosimilars, I believe that in the calendar year of 2024, we will start to see more meaningful contributions. As we are now reinvesting the sales that we have, especially in emerging markets, by building more capacity and building more R&D, this is our business model, and of course licensing in for the United States. So this is right now the model, and this continues to be the model probably until the calendar 2024 or fiscal 2025. As for the margins, I'm reiterating the famous 25-25 that we are sharing. We are very much in that direction, and it is coming faster than we anticipated, let's say 3 years ago. So we are very, very close to that.
Okay. About your partnership with Fresenius Kabi.
What about it?
For Pexelrasim,
we are waiting for them to launch and to enjoy their profits.
Okay. But they have got the approval, right?
Not that I'm aware of. They should get it, but I don't think they got it.
Okay. Yeah. And regarding the EBITDA margin.
I said that we are very close to the 25 EBITDA as well as the 25 ROC. We are getting closer to that, and this is where I would like to see the company in the quarters and years to come.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. So on the Sputnik opportunity, I think if I were to get it right, you mentioned that the export opportunity for Sputnik should potentially open up in the second half of the year. Now, from a longevity of this opportunity, do you see this essentially being a FY22 opportunity, or do you see it lasting much beyond 22 over the next maybe more than a year or 2 years as you see it?
It depends on what kind of booster policy countries will adopt. So at this stage, and as we all know, COVID is evolving faster than we can plan. At this stage on the export is either countries with lower level of vaccination, and in the medium term, it's primarily about the booster. But it, of course, depends on the booster protocol that each one of the countries will adopt, especially the countries in the emerging markets. So here it's yet to be seen, but this is the opportunity.
Okay, thanks. And secondly, on our R&D, now that we've significantly reduced our specialty work, where are we spending currently our R&D dollars on? Which areas are the focus areas for us going forward?
We are spending on our generic portfolio for the spaces in each one of the markets, meaning United States, China, Europe, emerging markets. We are trying to globalize the products. So we are developing products for more than one market, and if possible, to all of the relevant markets. It was part of the productivity products. But this is in line of our core business. In addition to that, we are spending money on biosimilars and recently also on COVID products as well as vaccines. Specifically for India, we do have in Russia certain clinical on some differentiated product, clinically differentiated products, that the money is also going there. Last but not least, we are developing APIs as well as intermediates as part of that. There is a small group under a branch of Dr. Reddy's called Origin Discovery that is developing products for immune oncology with a business model in which we are taking some of the assets and licensing out in early stage, and this is what is financing the products that we want one day to come to the marketplace. And this is part of what I discussed before of Horizon 2. The current business model of a generic, branded generic and API will continue to be our main business for the time being. At the same time, we are building new businesses that will serve us in the next coming years. Part of it is coming by our investment and part of it is coming by self-financing of that specific group. So we want to create the growth of our core business as well as building the new franchises and maintain the 25-25. This is the challenge that we took upon ourselves, and so far we are in that direction.
And if we can squeeze in one last one. We talked about inorganic growth. So what are the areas that typically are top priority for us from inorganic opportunity perspective?
So these are primarily complementary products or assets that can help us growth in our spaces. Like we did with the acquisitions of the products of Wockhardt at the time. So we are all the time evaluating primarily product assets. But in each one of our spaces, India, Russia, United States, Europe, we are evaluating deals and as well as emerging markets, which will be complementary in nature. And we are trying to leverage, of course, our relatively comfortable financial situation that we have now.
Thank you, and best wishes.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Dhamesha from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the follow-up. Again, coming back to the Sputnik export opportunity. So from the economics, does export change anything? I mean, in terms of the whatever profit margin that we get for India versus the export, is it different or would it be same?
Prices outside of India currently are higher than India.
Sure. And in terms of the quantities, it still remains the same, right? 125 million people, so roughly 250 million doses.
This is the current contract that we have with RDF is still the same. We are now trying just different outlets. It was meant primarily for India, and this did not materialize the way it was designed originally. Now we are trying to find opportunities in the other places that we have discussed.
So we have a contract in place right now for export or not?
We do have contracts for export in terms of places agreed that we can export the product, yes.
Sure. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sameer Vajiwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the follow-on. Any updated thoughts on outpatient health tech platform that you talked about? How is it progressing? What are the key milestones that you're looking out for?
Yes, we launched it in July. It is going very nicely. We are now at the stage of upgrading it to 5 more cities in India, as well as upgrading the digital platforms that is supporting it. The recruitment of the physicians is going well, and it's a very, very interesting, disruptive idea. Hopefully it will continue to be that way, but let's say the launch is encouraging.
Okay, and is it only towards the doctor consulting, or is it also towards e-pharmacy and diagnostics? Are you also expanding on that?
It's end-to-end solution, including all of the above.
Okay, great. And one more, as far as biosimilars for regulated market is concerned, can you confirm how many do you have in phase 3 clinical? I thought there was one Rituxan. And over next 12 to 24 months, how many more can enter into clinical trials?
Phase 3, we have one, which is rituximab. In the next period of time that you discuss, we will have 4 more.
4 more. Excellent. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Amit Agarwal for closing comments.
Thank you all for joining us today for the earnings call. In case of any further queries, please reach out to the investor relations team. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Dr. Reddy's Laboratories Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.